Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
So we have a bunch of listener questions. We have one more that's on assistant coaches, and then we've got some random ones.
Okay.
So the last assistant coach kind of question is from Ben Lee, who is a current assistant coach for the indoor staff at Loyola Marymount. He says, if you could go back in time and mentor or advise your younger self as an assistant coach, what areas would you advise to learn or engage in more to help you prepare for a head coaching position?
Ben Lee coming in with the challenging question.
It's an easy one.
What would I do differently as an assistant coach to better?
Basically, how are you? How would you prepare yourself, like, to be ready to be a head coach? Or were there things you would have done differently along the way to when you were an assistant?
I'll come back. I don't want to disregard Ben's question. I think back a lot to why some of the things I did as an assistant that I think helped me as a head coach. So I'll start there with what I think, looking back, I think I did well. And the first thing I think is I head coached a club team for about 10 years, and it wasn't the highest level club team, but head coaching is head coaching, and writing practices is writing practices, and communicating with parents is communicating with parents. And those skills are very specific to being in that role. And so, it was a pretty tough time, working at St. Mary's and then at night going to coach club, sometimes coaching two teams from 8 to 10 and then doing it all over again. But that's one thing that I'm glad I did, just being a head coach. One thing that I'm thankful for now that I probably wasn't thankful for back when it was happening, and I just have to throw Rob under the bus here. He would go to the Olympics all the time. Everyone wants to hang out with Rob. He would go to the Olympics, and he would always go, of course, during summer camp. So there were several times where I had to run summer camp, and that's a skill. Being a clinician is a skill, and leading a summer camp and leading demos and organizing a staff and, dealing with complaints. Those are skills. And what I realize now is what a gift, Rob gave me to be gone. And, I think 1 year the Olympics actually extended through August. So he missed part of training camp, and he let me and our other assistant, design training camp. So just those were things that I think really helped prepare me for being a head coach one day, is just doing very specific head coach things, no matter what the level was, just head coaching's head coaching. Things I would do differently. Ooh, that's a tough question. I think expose myself to a variety of different systems and programs. The organizations that I was a part of were all pretty closely aligned with how they teach the game and the language they speak. And I was very fortunate to work for two incredible coaches, who are just so good at what they do and know the game at such a high level. They share some similar principles, and I really wish I could see how other programs run, other programs that I'm now competing against, programs like Florida and Wisconsin, Texas, Michigan. I really wish I had an understanding of what they're great at and where they spend their time. That to me would just be gold, And so if I had a little more diversity in the programs that I spent time around, that's the one thing I wish coaches had. I wish we had like a coaching sabbatical where we could just take a semester off and fly to other gyms. And a lot of great coaches I know do that from time to time. They visit other gyms. I know I try to, but I could have done it as an assistant. It's a lot easier as an assistant to do that.
Nice. This one's from Eric Barber. At the University of Washington, you have created a culture where players feel comfortable coming into the office to share their opinions or concerns. What steps have you taken to create this culture?
Thanks, Eric. Eric is our assistant beach coach and has worked for us for a couple years and, played at UC San Diego. Great person. Someone who I actually hired, I think, after a 10-minute interview, but character, you know, just when you're talking about hires, character is a big deal. But to answer his question, when you get that bad news, when a player walks into your office and hits you with something heavy, I think the best thing you can do is to not react initially. And so the story that comes to mind, you know, which is a really difficult story at the time, was, you know, in my first year, I had an athlete walk into my office and say, things aren't going well. I said, I know things aren't going well. You're failing this class. You're not playing very well. You know, it's not really enjoying coaching right now. And she said, I'm just having a hard time. I don't respect you as much as I should. You know, I came here to play for Jim and he's gone now and I'm just having a hard time. And it was really painful to hear that. You know, this is a player that I had invested a tremendous amount of time in, a player who was making some mistakes and I wasn't crushing her. You know, I was standing by her and here she was hitting me with that comment, you know, and I just let heard it and I just let the initial reaction, the emotion pass. And I said, okay, well, I'll see you practice later. And the funny part about it was, you know, I told someone that happened and they said, oh yeah, players just say that to me all the time. You know, they would say that all the time. And once I heard that, once I heard that it wasn't me and that kids are kids and it's the equivalent of, you know, a small child walking up and telling their mom, I hate you. You know, they don't really hate them. They're just having a hard time and they're lashing out, you know. And so to not react, I think, makes it better the next time. The next time that player walks in the office, they know that no matter what they tell you, you're with them. You know, you may not be happy. You may have to have some consequences, but you're still with them, you know. And, you know, the other half of that story is that player went on to just do amazing things. We have a great relationship now, you know, and I could have totally screwed that up in that moment. You know, I could have reacted and said, well, then get out of here. Here's your release papers. Have a great career. You know, I could have reacted. And so that would be something that I think helps contribute to a culture of openness.
Nice. And Eric's follow-up, in situations where a player might not be leaving with the resolution they want, how do you attempt to get them to walk out the door feeling the conversation was successful?
Yeah. If they came into your office to talk, it's successful, first of all. You know, if they have a problem, if they came in, you've already won to some degree. And what I tell them and what I tell myself is you may not leave with the answer you want, but you'll certainly feel a lot better when you walk out of this office than you walked in. You know, and another principle we talk about is problems don't age well, you know, and when things are inside of our head and they ruminate and they spin around, they just become just this unstoppable force, you know, and you can really convince yourself of some crazy things if you think about it long enough. You know, you can really, it's like a habit is what, you know, your thoughts are habits. That's something that Jim would talk about, and I didn't fully understand it until years later. Just, you know, if you let a thought spin around over and over and over again, it'll turn into something gnarly. You know, good thoughts turn into good things, you know, and bad thoughts can just rip you apart. So, getting them out is the first thing you got to do.
I like that. So, Rob Browning, another listener, the head coach at St. Mary's, he asks, what are some reliable indicators of good team culture? And what do you like to see from your team that tells you our team culture is good?
Well, here's one thing I really hear a lot that I disagree with. Coaches and teams will say, and, you know, this isn't news to Rob. I think I brought this up to him, but maybe it is for listeners. You know, they'll say, hey, we've got great team chemistry. Yeah, we get along. We never have any issues. And I kind of laugh and I say, that's not team chemistry, that's team harmony, you know? And when you think about chemistry, what is chemistry? It's kind of this violent, you know, action, reaction, neutralizers, catalysts, you know, just balancing. It's just, there's things happening. It's not this kind of peaceful, tranquil process. And so there has to be some things happening. You have to have some players who are trying to motivate the group. You have to have some players who are steady, you know, in their approach to the game. You have to have some players who just give unconditionally to their team. So having just a diverse roles on your team, I think, is really powerful, you know, and trying to help your players understand what their individual strengths are as leaders, and encouraging them to, you know, to do more of the thing that they're great at, you know, I think is something that I've gotten pretty passionate about when it comes to team culture. So it's the right kind of conflict, you know, there's a certain healthy level of conflict that you have to pay close attention to. There's other indicators, you know, eye contact, you know, in between rallies, you know, the sincerity in which players talk to each other, you know, that's one thing that I've been trying to talk about with this junior national team is most of what they say to each other is totally scripted. It's not sincere. It's not unique to the situation. You know, they'll say things like, if the score is 11-11, they'll say things like, come on, let's push to 12, you know, or just, come on, we got to give more energy right now. Just these kind of scripted things that coaches have told them that they're supposed to say, you know, and they have nothing to do with the play. You know, there'll be plays where someone will whack it out of bounds, or someone will get tooled, or someone will miss a dig, and someone will say, good touch, good touch. And I'll look at them and I'll say, what are you talking about? Well, that is the most insincere feedback you could ever give her. She just made a bad play. Why are you telling her good job? You know, but the thing is, they're just going off script. And I think when you watch, you know, our women's national team, or, you know, the closest version I have to that is Courtney Thompson has come by our gym for an alumni game, and just the sincerity in which she talks to her teammates, you know, and she's really specific about what she says to them, and it's totally accurate to what just happened. You know, I think that is the sign of somebody who's really contributing to your team chemistry.
And then what are indicators of a bad team culture? Is it too much harmony?
It can be. Yeah. You know, it can be. Long silences, lack of eye contact, overly aggressive conflict, you know, but there's warning signs before you get there. It's about paying really close attention to your athletes. You know, if you pay really close attention to kind of their day-to-day approach to the game, you notice the differences. And when you notice the differences, you got to, you know, in the right moment, ask them, hey, what's going on? You know, I think a lot of coaches fail to realize that most of the worst behaviors come from a place of just fear. You know, almost every time I have an athlete who's kind of off in left field with their behavior, there's something going on and they just haven't told me yet. The last thing I would say that I would really want coaches to know is I hear coaches say, you need to call her out. You need to call your teammates out when they're not behaving the way we want them to behave. And I think it's such a dangerous phrase. The reality of the situation is that athlete's already out. Their behavior has pulled them out of the group. You need to bring them back. You know, you need to bring them back into the group. And so that's what I would want to tell my athlete. Hey, you got to bring her back. You know, she's having a hard time right now. You got to bring her back into the group, not call her out. There's this kind of image in my mind of, you know, your senior captain, you know, calling a freshman out, you know, into, you know, onto an island saying, you know, hey, go stand over here. You're not with us, you know, and just that image of kind of ostracizing that person that I don't think contributes to good team chemistry. You know?
So then how would Courtney Thompson bring that player back?
Ooh, I'm not going to speak for Courtney Thompson.
can't do it in her voice?
No, I don't have nearly the energy or the skill or the passion to do anything like that. But I know she's got courage. You know, I know she's got the courage to have the hard conversation. And she might screw it up. You know, I think she tells a story about screwing it up, you know, where she, you know, tried to tell some teammates they weren't doing it right. And she was totally wrong. She was totally wrong in the way that she did it. But it eventually worked itself out. And as it usually does, the first step is you got to go for it. Better to make a mistake going for it than to, you know, just not try and address it.
Right. So I have two more from Rob. He says, how do you use consequences to motivate or teach your team?
We don't run a lot. We never run or do physical consequences for performance-based things. You know, hey, if we're going to do a coach on one or we're going to do a touch six, it's going to be for effort, for communication, for not treating a teammate the way that we agreed to treat each other. Those things, I think, you know, are met with, hey, we're just going to run here. You know, we can't, you know, you can't do that. Let's just run for a while. Or, hey, I think I did what I thought was a pretty mild coach on one compared to, you know, what I've heard from Marv Gumpy, you know, but my players have remembered it forever. You know, we had a couple of athletes, I think, who got a noise complaint, you know, and got written up for it. And so we did a coach on one on Monday, and, you know, I think it was like a 2-minute coach on one, and they were pretty tired. And I didn't think it was that intense, but they'll remember that forever. So consequences to me, you know, there's consequences in life. There's just some things you can't do. At some point you get to an age, you know what, you can't do that anymore. Sorry, you know? And so maybe that's the place for consequences. But yeah, when it comes to competition, winning and losing, just, yeah, we like winning because we like winning, not because we don't want to not run.
Mm. All right, last one from Rob. How do you balance positive and negative feedback?
I just, the word I always come back to is I want to be sincere. I really want to be sincere. I'm not going to qualify my feedback into positive and negative. I'm going to qualify it as what I'm telling you right now is what I believe to be exactly what you need to be who you want to be and do what you want to do. And one thing that Jim used to say that I really value now more than ever is the truth hurts, but people can handle it. The truth hurts, but people can handle it. And he's right. These women are more resilient than we give them credit for. They can handle more than often we can even imagine. And if what you're telling them comes from a sincere place and it's done in a respectful way, it can be negative feedback that's respectful or, you know, positive feedback, then they'll respond. You know, they'll respond and they can handle it and then they'll grow from it. If it comes from a place of your own personal frustration or your own anxiety or, you know, then it's not going to go well. And so where is your feedback coming from? You know, and whenever my feedback comes from a place of frustration, it never goes well, you know, and it's a battle all the time, you know, but I think that's an important thing to ask yourself as a coach, you know. I steal all of these guys' sayings. I think Marv has a saying of you can't kid a kid, you know. You can fool a fool, you can fool yourself, but you can't kid a kid. You know, they're smart. They are so smart, and they know when you really care about them or when you're just angry.
So if Billy's been struggling all practice and you're giving him some negative feedback and it's been kind of a more negative in general, are you looking for an opportunity to kind of pump him up and give him some positive at some point, or it's just keep it honest?
I think they see right through that, you know. If you can try and be sincere, but you know, we've all seen that, right? You're on some kid, and then they make like a marginally good play, and you try and pump them up. And I think maybe a better question that I try and ask a lot, especially when I've been on an athlete for a while, you know, if I've given them a lot of feedback and I start to sense that frustration, before I go in for that next piece of feedback, I say to them, hey, can I coach you right now? Can I coach you? Are you good to get some feedback? And 9 times out of 10, they say, yeah, you know, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they say, hey, I needed to kind of do my thing. And I think that's really important, you know, knowing when to give your athlete space, you know, is a skill as well, as opposed to just kind of riding them all the way into the ground.
So we have one more that's kind of on culture, and it's from the head coach at Fresno State, Jonathan Winder, who we've already mentioned, a former teammate of mine. And I think you've kind of answered this, but maybe this will help us kind of tie it all together. He says, what skills and what cultural values have led to the consistency in performance of your teams?
I'm still with you. I'm just, these guys are crushing me with these really hard questions. What are some of the big values that have led to consistent performance? I don't think that, I like to believe that every coaching decision that I've made is in the best interest of the team, and that they're, you know, the athletes at times may feel like, man, he's so hard on her right now, or he's going easy on her. But if you ask them at the end of the year, did you make all the right moves at the right time? You know, does anyone have a case to say, I should have had a bigger role, or I should have been playing at this time? Does anyone have a case? I think they're going to say no. You know, I think they're going to say no. You know what? Given everything that was going on, that decision you made was the right one. And it was objective, and it didn't matter what the circumstance was with that player. That was the right choice. So being objective with your decision-making, I think is, you know, and being committed to that, you know, is, you know, a really important factor in being successful. Again, you know, spreading out the load amongst your staff, giving people ownership, letting them, trusting them to take large responsibilities that are very, very critical to your success. Doesn't mean that you just delegate and then walk away, but that you really let them know that they get to make the decisions. You ask their opinions, you know, and you just watch what they can do with it. You know, and the great coaches I've worked for have allowed me to do that. They allowed me as an assistant to take portions of the game and to own it and to make some decisions that affected the team tremendously, you know, and so I try and, you know, again, follow that same principle. You know, you cannot do it on your own. Nobody accomplishes greatness alone. And so you gotta divvy it up.
Nice.
That's maybe two things.
Yeah. And listener Kevin McCullough wants to know what you think is the most important skill in volleyball. John says reading. Kevin says it's attitude. What do you say?
Wow, skill is a pretty broad term. no one said serving. Man, serving is a really big deal. I don't know. I keep drifting between skills and values.
Right.
You know, I my mind keeps saying resiliency. You know, being resilient is just so crucial. You know, just how many athletes I've worked with who've been through just the gnarliest circumstances, and just show me that being resilient is the deal. You're going to get just knocked back in a thousand different ways, but usually in one or two big moments, you're just going to get crushed. And are you resilient? You know, do you come back again the next day and get through it? Give me some examples again. What were the answers? They said reading. What else?
Kevin says attitude. I like resiliency.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with that. I think that's something that just every player on my team has a story that I usually know. They don't even know about each other sometimes. If they did, they might even respect each other even more if they knew, you know, just what each of them have been through. So, resiliency.
All right. And I got these, compared to this one, they've all been easy questions. So I got a tough one to end it.
Ooh, this is tough.
Listener Ian says you were an amazing snowblader in college. Did you ever consider going pro? I had to look up what that was.
What's a snowblader?
Yeah, it's like these short skis that unathletic people. No, that's what I was unathletic. People who can't snowboard use. Yeah, no, I'm strictly twin tip alpine skis now. That's my December activity. You know, after the season's over, I head up to Whistler, and you know that's my happy place. So
he was saying all the cool guys in Colorado hadn't really picked it up yet.
Yeah, no. When you're the only one with them, it should tell you something. You're either a pioneer.
You're ahead of the trends.
The trend that never became anything yet.
It's coming.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Yeah, I'm sweating profusely. You guys just put me through the ringer. So.
Hey, you said you wanted to be challenged, and I was worried. I didn't know if we'd be able to, but I think we got some good ones in there.
Yeah, no, it was great. It's always good to have these experiences. Thank you guys for the time at night too. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. It was great. A lot of good insights, and appreciate you being so open and vulnerable.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Coach Your Brains Out. You can follow us on Twitter at Coach Your Brain or on Facebook, facebook.com/Coach Your Brains Out. If you like the show, please write us a review and spread the word.